Welcome to Mommy Heal Thyself. We feature guests who provide you with the tools, resources, and strategies you need to say no to a life of pain and suffering from all forms of preventable disease, toxic drugs, and unnecessary surgeries. We hope to inspire you to boldly reclaim your ability to heal and to serve the ones you love.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. Today, I'm able to introduce you to James White. He is the CEO of KBMO Diagnostics. Now, KBMO Diagnostics is a fully integrated medical diagnostic company. They offer food sensitivity testing that measures sensitivities for up to 176 different foods, coloring, additives, using food inflammation tests, also known as the FIT test. The test was created to be able to rapidly diagnose all of these different sensitivities. Now, in addition to the FIT test, they offer a unique zonulin assay and new gut barrier panel. So the FIT test comes in three different panels, the FIT 22, the FIT 132, and 176. The FIT test is the most sensitive food test available using patented technology. Now, all of that is all technical and good, James, but you know, we want to get down into the real nitty gritty of who you are and what the heck is KBMO?
That is a great opening question. So KBMO stands K, Catherine, my wife. So again, seems very appropriate given we're a woman. So it's K for Catherine, my wife. B, Ben, my eldest son, M, Max, my middle son. As I always say, we save the best to last. O, Olivia, my daughter. So we all have bosses. So again, those are my four bosses. And it felt very appropriate to name the company after them. And we've been going now, gosh, nearly 15 years. So so they remain my bosses and very, very thankful to have them all in my lives and make sure that keeps me grounded and hopefully less technical in the opening that you just described on us.
So I'm curious, is there a personal story connected to why food sensitivity panels?
Yes, it was interesting. I've been in healthcare diagnostics for about 25, 30 years now. And one of the things that kind of always struck me was, you know, when I moved across the US, that lots of people were doing different tests and stuff, and we were working a lot with cardiologists, but no one was really kind of helping a patient on an individualized basis. So it seemed like after 8 years of studying cardiology, people were saying, eat less and exercise more. And there didn't really seem to be a way of, okay, what does that mean for an individual? So how can they do that on an individualized basis to make that really straightforward and simple? And so I was running this business that was doing all this cardiovascular testing, and I came across a gentleman called Dr. Brent Dorval who created this test, and it really struck a chord because I thought, right, this is the next generation or the next level of testing because it's really speaking to you as an individual. And one of the things I loved about it was, look, it's not judgmental. I mean, everyone goes to the doctor, they get their kind of standard lipid profile. No one, I can pretty confidently say no one on this call or anyone who I ever come across said, James, let me tell you about my triglyceride levels. So the idea is that with this test, it's non-judgmental, which I really love, and it makes it much more appealing and frankly, accessible to your listeners. So that's the key for me. It's like, how do we make this stuff as accessible as possible? A good example of that is, you know, I hear about AI a lot. We provide our providers with laminated copies of the foods we test. Old school, but again, it makes it really easy for the providers and the patients to understand it. So yes, I really think it's a wonderful thing, all these advancements in medicine and IT and everything else. But fundamentally, it's all about the individuals and the choices we make and trying to make sure that we be compliant. And so for me as an organization, as a company, want to keep but make it simple enough that, you know, once the provider has reviewed those results with you, you're not left going, oh my gosh, I've got no idea what they just said. So we want to keep it simple enough that, you know, patients can be compliant because they take the view, people come to see their provider because they want to improve their health outcome, whatever it might be.
You know, I have to share with you the fact that food sensitivity test was a game changer and a lifesaver for my family, you know, particularly my daughter, who had significant behavioral issues and blood glucose regulation issues, diabetic. And when we did the food sensitivity test, we were able to identify the specific foods that were triggering the behavior and also triggering spikes in her blood glucose. And it was amazing. I mean, to the point where when we went through that situation where the wonderful Department of Children and Family Services and their infinite wisdom decided to take her from me, within less than 6 hours, and I told them, I was like, just make sure you do not give her these foods. You know, it's like, I don't know if you guys are, I'm probably going to date myself, but I don't know if you remember the movie Gremlins. And it was like, they had the cute little furry little animal. And Mr. Miyagi, or whoever the little guy was, he's like, and above all else, do not feed them after such and such a time. Well, I said the same thing to these interesting people. I said, please do not give her these foods. Of course, they didn't pay any attention to me. Within less than 6 hours, they had to admit her to the hospital because her blood glucose levels had gotten so high. Within less than 24 hours, she became catatonic. And by the end of the week, she was laid up in bed with her legs inflamed and swollen. So this information is so powerful, you know. Now, James, could you tell us a little bit more about what do these tests look like? You know, I know you have like the 22 panel and then the 130 something and then 176. So what's the difference in between the panels? Why those types?
Yeah, so there's three panels and the number is associated with the number of foods, colorings and additives that we measure. Because the idea was to say, look, we want to make this successful, as I said up front. And so the idea here is, so there's a fit 22 of 132 and 176 to meet different kind of budgets. And the neat thing with the 132 and the 176 is they also include our gut barrier panel, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure. So the idea is to try and be as comprehensive as possible, but at the bottom end, give people the option to kind of test for the 22 most common foods, colorings and additives. So the idea is, as I say, as an organization, we want to make these things accessible. And so that's really how we've kind of differentiated that. And when I started with the business, we had just the Fit 132. And to deal with that accessibility, we came up with the 22. Mm-hmm. And then the 176 was born out of we spoke with just over 300 of our providers and said, look, you know, what would you like to have added? Because every day we're hearing from different people saying, oh, it would be great if you could add X, Y, or Z. And so the idea is we added some different foods, colorings, and additives to enable those providers to have kind of more access to a slightly wider group of foods, colorings, and additives than before. And the key, I think, is those colorings and additives, because again, you can't ignore them. They're everywhere in the kind of this modern environment. And typically we say you find them in three different places. You find them in processed foods, which a lot of the, you know, people listening are, we're all guilty of eating those, increasingly in supplements as well. And thirdly, in personal hygiene products. I think shampoos, kind of conditioners, washing powders, things like that. In fact, I had a provider only the other day who was telling me about a 10-year-old boy who we tested him and he'd come up for a thing called benzoic acid, which was in his mum's washing powder and the shampoo they were using on him. He was very lethargic. After 6 weeks of avoiding those contacts, he turned it back into his normal kind of 10-year-old boisterous self. So again, the reason I highlight something like benzoic acid is some people will say, look, I don't need to test. I can go on an elimination diet. I don't think there's an elimination diet that says, well, why don't we start with benzoic acid? So again, I think that's why it's kind of critical to look at all these foods, but also colorings and additives, because that's the modern environment that we all live in.
Yeah. You know, and I do work a lot with people who would do the elimination diet, but when you're dealing with a kid, you don't really have the time and they don't have the patience to go through that process of the elimination protocol. So when, like I said, when I was dealing with my daughter, and she's also a person with cognitive delay. So I didn't have time to waste. I need to know specifically what I needed to eliminate and, you know, and not have to go through all of those, you know, test this. So like I said, it was Oh God, a blessing. So I'm curious, what's in the 22 panel? This the more convenient, affordable panel.
So some of the bit, what I call the big three, so eggs, milk, and wheat, are the big three that kind of within food sensitivity. So they're within there. We've got some proteins and some of the things that are in supplements as well, like coriander and stuff like that. So we've tried chicken, salmon's in there as well. So we've tried to give a blend of things that people are consuming on a regular basis, but some of equally the higher ones in terms of are more common. So wheat, gluten, and whole wheat are on there. And then the egg and whole egg and egg yolk are on there. Mm-hmm. So again, and then a lot of dairy things as well, because again, dairy is another big one in terms of for the three, big three. In terms of one of the other things, projects we were looking at doing is developing a kind of at-home test at some point down the line for those big three of the egg, milk, and wheat, because I think it's a, you know, it'd be great if you could kind of test yourself for those three as a standalone as well. So that's what generally we try to put on that to kind of make sure that, you know, it covers some of the bigger things. But then, as I say, with the 176, what we heard from our providers that they wanted a deeper dive into the grain. So we added some ancient grains. They wanted closer links to some of the supplements. So things like acai berry, goji berry, monk fruit, and stevia, which are in a lot of the powders that providers hand out. One of the other things we added was CBD, given that's broadly prescribed these days as well. So again, it's a combination now of, and then some of the other supplements, we also include mackerel and sardine in that bigger one, because again, that's the backbone of omega-3. So you wanna make sure, given the test generally, that, you know, what we're trying to do is get to the root cause of which foods on an individualized basis, like in your daughter's case, are causing inflammation. And then those symptoms come up in different ways, but it fundamentally, what our job is to identify which foods are causing you as an individual an inflammatory response. And so I always give the analogy for patients. Think about when you go and buy a car, the car dealer will tell you which is the right gas oil to put in your car. And so by running this test, it's the same thing for you as an individual to try and work out what's the best kind of quote gas or oil in terms of foods that you can take on in terms of which will make sure your engine or body will run as smoothly and as efficiently as possible.
So I'm curious, the 22 panel, does it include any of like the dyes or the environmental toxins?
We've got some on there for sure, but it's a slightly lower number just because of, again, it was a choice of the 22 most common things. So yeah, a number of them are on there, which I think have been really helpful. I'm just going to bring that.
Now, one of the things that I really loved about your panel, because I've done several other types of food sensitivity panels, but yours is the first one that I've seen that includes those phenomenal factors that relate to intestinal barrier. So if you could talk a little bit more about that specific specialty part of your test.
Yeah, and it really was born out of, you know, a kind of chicken and egg, which came first? Was it leaky gut or was it food sensitivity? And we were hearing from a lot of providers, look, you know, we love this test. We love the fact it's patented. We love the fact it's looking at these multiple pathways. It eliminates these false positives. We've got these great compliance tools for the patients, but I don't use it on all my patients because some of them have leaky gut. So that kind of stuck in my mind a bit and said, why, you know, what is it about leaky gut in particular that means that they're not doing the food sensitivity test? So in their defense, there wasn't really any good leaky gut panels out there at the time. So that was why we kind of, the kind of genesis of why we developed it was based off that. And what we came up with was like, let's come up with four markers that give you a really good screen to work out what might be going on from a leaky gut perspective. So without getting too technical, one is candida, which looks at kind of an early indication of kind of dysbiosis. So kind of like almost a canary in the coal mine from a leaky gut perspective. Then in the other two markers were a thing called zonulin and occludin, which are, one of them's looking at how those tight junctions are functioning. So are they opening and closing as they should? And then the occludin is looking at structurally, are they still sound or have they begun to come apart? Mm-hmm. And the fourth one we had was a thing called LPS, which is lipopolysaccharides, as one of our favorite providers, Dr. Rob Silverman, calls it El Diablo. So if anything's going wrong with that, it's kind of linked with all the gram-negative bacteria in your gut as well. So the idea was with those four markers, we could give you a pretty good way of trying to interpret, does this patient have leaky gut? And if they do, let's heal the gut on the basis, you know, way all the way back with Hippocrates, he said all disease starts in the gut. So it felt like if we can work on healing the gut, then that'll also have a very positive impact on those food sensitivities as well.
Yeah. And, you know, that is such an important critical factor that a lot of times people don't consider when they're removing, quote unquote, the offending food, that is not going to fix the problem. You know, I mean, it helps to calm the system down, but you have to go in and heal the gut. And so I love the fact that you guys have this marker because it gives you a very qualitative way of being able to see what's the baseline, meaning what's the starting point of those four factors in terms of the candida, the zonulin, the oculin, and the LPS. And then as you start to work at healing the gut, work at removing some of the excess bacteria, the candida, and things of that nature, you can retest to see if you've made progress before trying to reintroduce the foods that you remove. Because what I've seen in a lot of cases is that people start removing foods and before long, they're down to nothing. It's like the only thing that they have left is to eat cardboard because they become sensitive to practically everything because they didn't realize that it wasn't just simply, the food is not the bad guy, is basically what I'm saying. You know, so this test is a game changer in terms of helping us to put the pieces together. James?
What I always say to people is like, you know, to that point, one of the great things with this test that was created by, our technical partner, a gentleman called Dr. Brent Dorval, who was a brilliant, brilliant scientist. And, you know, he developed the first rapid HIV diagnostic. So the way he approached this was said, let's look at, rather than just looking at which foods you're exposed to, which is the classical food sensitivity test, this one looks at not only what you're exposed to, but then goes on to look at the other half of your immune system called the innate immune system, which truly identifies of the ones you're exposed to, which ones are leading to that inflammatory response. And so that's where really the magic happens, because again, rather than just stopping and telling you, okay, great, so I spent this money on a test that tells me what I already know, this one goes on to say, okay, so of the things you're exposed to, these are the ones that are leading to an inflammatory response. And to give you an idea what does that really mean for me as an individual, I ran an IgG only test, and there's plenty of those available. Some great companies do it. The limitation of that isn't those companies, it's that pathway, because it, as I mentioned, it's only telling you what you're exposed to. So when I ran one of those, and then I ran our fit test on the same day, the IgG only came up with 25 plus foods. The fit test came up with 5. So that's the real difference in terms of, you know, without getting involved in technical jargon, but, you know, they'll say, well, this eliminates false positive, which means nothing to 99% of us. But the reality, hopefully that kind of stark contrast shows you that there's no way we can all take out 25 foods, because you end up in this kind of food prison that you were just wonderfully well just describing, Michelle. So what we're doing is focusing on just the foods that cause you inflammation, because that's the root cause of pretty much every disease state that you come across. So that's where we want to focus our efforts versus telling you, frankly, what you already know.
And, you know, I guess where I should have started all of this is to ask you to really give us more of an understanding of exactly what is a food sensitivity and what types of symptoms would one be experiencing that would encourage you to take this kind of test.
Yeah, so I think the best way of describing it is and it's not just patients, it's providers as well. We talk about food allergies and food sensitivities kind of almost intermingled. But the reality, what we're talking about here is we're talking about foods, we're talking about food sensitivity. And the reason we do that versus allergy is because with the food sensitivities that we're looking at, it's a delayed response that makes it really hard for a provider to work out what might be going on, because that delay can be up to 72 hours. Mm-hmm. And so an allergy is an instant response, and generally the symptoms are much more severe. But with our food sensitivity, as I said, it's that delayed nature. They're both immunological responses, but the reality is with a food sensitivity, that 72-hour delay makes it really tough for anyone, patient or provider, to work out, you know, which foods did I consume in that time that may well be leading to the symptoms that they present with. And your question about symptoms is a great one. And we've got just over 10,000 providers running the test now. And so I'm often asking them, you know, what's a good patient to run this test on? And what are some of the symptoms you see? And it varies from weight loss, autoimmune disease, thyroid problems, arthritis. And what we're now seeing, which has been really interesting to me, brain fog, fatigue, migraines, obviously the classical things like digestive, gut-related and skin problems in particular. And we're doing actually a study with Purdue University at the moment looking at autism as well. But one of the things that the big kind of changes has been, we did a study probably about 15 years ago, just when I got involved with the company, and the leading symptoms were anxiety and brain fog and migraines. So real clear links with brain health and then gut health. I must admit, 15 years ago, maybe we didn't have the courage of our convictions to say, make that statement. Look, you know, brain health and gut health seems to have kind of a pretty strong link here.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate now. We've got a number of leading neurologists that actually run our test based off that exactly stuff. So, it's, you know, it's really interesting. They're always correcting me, saying, no, James, it's leaky brain leads to leaky gut versus us saying generally leaky gut leads to leaky brain. So it's one of those two things. So lots of symptoms, many and varied. But again, I think, you know, generally it's a great almost, you know, tool for everyone to kind of get run for, to see, let's baseline what's going on. And I think if COVID taught us all not anything, you know, what we're all now is very much responsible for our own health. So again, this is a great way of working out which foods, which we're all, you know, we're all having to consume 3 to 5 times a day, would cause you inflammation or not. And I think that's a really powerful thing. Plus now with that gut barrier, to see what might be going on from an immune health. And again, frankly, we haven't really moved on that far from back in Hippocrates' day. He was saying all disease begins in the gut. Guess what? I'm saying the same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that you're making that connection, because what I tell people is, if you have a leaky gut, you have a leaky brain. And to emphasize the importance of looking at this when we have any kind of brain health issue, any kind of mental health issue. So I've used it a lot of times with children and adults who have, say, ADD, have behavioral issues, mood swings, you know, depression, anxiety, food, or should I say the migration of the quote unquote food particles into the area beyond the gut is not a good thing. And it affects everything, like you said, with the autoimmunity, even like I said, blood glucose issues. Sometimes people are just floundering, like, oh my gosh, I've done everything I need to do in terms of trying to lower my blood sugar levels, and not realizing that certain trigger foods can create spikes in their blood sugar. It's just amazing.
Keep going, sure. It's fascinating to me. I mean, zonulin, there's great studies now showing elevated zonulin leads to cardiovascular disease. Same with LPS. It's a crossing of not only the blood-brain barrier, but linking in with heart disease as well. So again, not a shock for you, but all these systems are interrelated. So again, if you're looking at the tight junctions, hopefully this isn't a surprise for everyone, but they're the same in your brain as they are your gut. So again, what we're trying to work out is, you know, how these things are all interacting. If you've got a leaky gut, then you're going to have leaky other things as well. So again, that's why I think the importance of adding that into the food is to give you a really good idea of how my kind of systems overall working and functioning. And then more importantly, let's try and avoid inflaming those things unbeknown to us. So again, it could be many different foods, or a handful of things which are causing that. And so, again, I think that's one of certainly the nice things for patients to understand. If you're elevated for eggs, we all know what an egg is. If someone tells you your triglycerides are 500, you probably don't understand that. So again, it's trying to simplify this to a point that we can empower patients to really take care of their own health. But I always kind of underline that with the help of really good providers behind that. And we, I would say, work with the 1% of providers who understand the importance of nutrition to your diet, to your lifestyle. And I think, you know, the big three of exercise, diet, and sleep are the three kind of key things for most patients. So again, and those are things we can all take control of. And I think this one certainly gives you a real head start on that, you know, and what you're consuming to make sure you're doing the best you can in terms of your body by understanding what causes you inflammation and potentially what doesn't.
Yeah. And you know, it's so important, as you were saying, to recognize two things, which is that this test is so phenomenal that you can do it at home. You do not have to go to the lab and have your blood drawn. You can just do it at home. It's a simple finger prick and you get the blood sample and you send it into the lab so that you can get that data. So there is that self-empowerment piece. And then you couple it with having a provider that you can take this data to, because as I said, it's not as simple as just removing, quote unquote, the offending foods, because really and truly the food is not the bad guy. You know, you have to start to get down to, okay, why am I sensitive to these foods? You know, what's going on? What's the trigger? What's the mechanism? And how do I actually heal my system so that I can go back to eating healthy foods? So James, I really appreciate you being able to take this time with us. And we are going to be including in the notes the link to your website so that people can get this test. And is there anything special that we can include with that for our viewers?
If they link in the fact that they've listened to you and I on this podcast, what I'll try and do is we'll work to see if there's a provider, and well, hopefully they'll come back through you would be yeah. ideal. So that would be the kind of the perfect thing. And then what we'll do is let you and I talk about hopefully giving them a discount based off, you know, the pricing that you're charging them. So hopefully we can kind of encourage them to obviously work with great providers. And so none better than who we've got on with us all today. So again, to kind of then review those results and kind of go forward with that. And I think, you know, one of the questions that someone asked me, like, you know, what's the one key piece of advice? I think it's trying to find a good provider who's either A4M, IFM, SAFM, or NTA type trained, so that then they can help you in terms of A, understand these results, but more importantly, kind of help you in terms of with the guidance as you guys move forward on whatever your health journey may be.
Yeah. And for anyone who's interested, you can feel free to reach out to me for more details and assistance. And more than anything else, as James is sharing, this is a powerful tool, not only for yourself, for your children, for family members that perhaps you've been concerned about. And it is an objective test. You know, some of the challenges with elimination protocols, it's like, you're like, okay, is it really this? Oh no, it's not the eggs. I can't believe it's the eggs. No, it can't be it. But this is an objective assessment that will help you to identify the things that you want to, you know, moderate. And that's the other thing that's beautiful about your testing, that you're also providing people with a nutrition plan based on their testing result.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we try to spend a lot of time on is those compliance tools. So the report's only 3 pages and it's color-coded to make it accessible to the busy provider as well as the patient. Then we have a meal plan, which is based off your individual test results. And that, so if you do the FIT 132 or the 176, that's included with it. And then what we've also added recently is a patient app. So the idea is you review the results with the provider, and then 14 days later, as a reminder, we send you that app. And that app has your meal plan that Dr. Michelle just mentioned. It also, for each of those foods you're sensitive to, we show you what that might cross you out with, where you might find it, and some alternatives and substitutes just for those foods. So the idea is to empower you to have that information. But it's a great tool because if you're grocery shopping, you've got it with you. If you're out for dinner, then you've got it with you. And so as I'm sure we all seen in restaurants, that couples who are just, you know, head down in their phones. Maybe if they had the test done, they could look and see which foods are going to cause some sensitivity, which will make them have a more enjoyable evening anyway. So again, that's another key thing that we've done, is to try and make it as accessible, given I think one of the things that most of your patients will have in common, and we've got patients around the world now, is they all have a smartphone. So the idea is by having that on their phone is really helpful to help with the compliance of the test.
And so, you know, as I said before, if this is a concern for you, and I think it's probably a concern for the majority of people listening to this, if you can do nothing else, get the 22 panel just to start that journey. And for those of you who have already identified, like, yeah, Michelle, I know that it's gluten, I know it's dairy, I encourage you to consider bumping up to the other panel, you know, either the middle panel or the larger panel, so that you can get the information, the data that you need to be able to take some of the anxiety out of eating. Because I know a lot of people, they're like, oh my God, I don't know what to eat. I'm scared of eating anything because I feel like I'm just going to get a reaction. So this helps to cut down on the anxiety too, as it pertains to just our relationship with food, right? It's better to know than to sit there guessing and worrying and being anxious about what should be a pleasurable, nourishing experience, which is eating food.
And to your point, I mean, I've had doctors who said to me, like, I'm not running the test. I know what foods I'm sensitive to. And I test them and they come back and they said, look, you know, one doctor said, look, it's eggs because I have eggs every morning. When we ran his test, guess what came out? It was oranges, because guess what did he have with his eggs every morning? Glass of orange juice. So again, that's where this information can be really powerful to work out what is it on an individualized basis is causing that issue. And I think that's really helpful that, you know, even physicians who sometimes believe they're really in tune with their body, because we're all consuming so many different things, then it's really powerful to pinpoint which food it might be. And then you can then move forward, you know, with that confidence of knowing, you know, what you should be eliminating and avoiding, or what you can be consuming with, you know, and feeling good about.
Well, James, once again, thank you so very much. And everyone, be sure to click on the link in the show notes to go over to KBMO website, and also to reach out to James and tell him that you heard about this through Mommy Heal Thyself. Until next time, my ladies, peace and blessings.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. If you like what we're doing here, please share, subscribe, like us, and leave a comment. Your feedback is very much appreciated.